Chapter 9, The Dark Ship. They were being pulled slowly forwards, their captors, whose shadowy shapes Harun started to be able to make out as his eyes became accustomed to the darkness, were drawing the web along by invisible but powerful superstrings of some sort. Forward to what, though? Here Harun's imagination failed him. All he could see in his mind's eye was a huge black hole yawning at him like a great mouth and sucking him slowly in. Up the creek, pretty pickle, at our chips, if disconsolately remarked. But the hoopoe was in an equally cheerless state of mind. To Khatam Shud we go, all neatly wrapped and tied up like a present. The hoopoe wailed without moving its beak. Then it's zap, bam, foot finito for all of us. There he sits at the heart of darkness, at the bottom of a black hole, so they say, and he eats light, eats it with his raw, bare hands, and lets none of it escape. He eats words, too, and he can be in two places at once, and there is no getting away. Woe is us! Alas, alack the day! Hi, hi, hi! You're a fine pair of companions, and make no mistake, Harun said as lightheartedly as he could manage. To Butt the Hoopoe, he added, some machine. You swallow every spooky story you hear, even the ones you find in other people's minds. That black hole, for example, I was thinking about that, and you just pinched it, and then let it frighten you. Honestly, Hoopoe, pull yourself together. How to pull myself together? Or anywhere else? But the hoopoe lamented without moving its beak, when other persons, troopwalla persons, are pulling me wherever they desire. Look down, if broken, look down at the ocean. The thick, dark poison was everywhere now, obliterating the colors of the streams of story, which Harun could no longer tell apart. A cold, clammy feeling rose up from the water, which was near freezing point, as cold as death. Harun found himself thinking. If's grief began to overflow. It's our fault, he wept. We are the guardians of the ocean, and we didn't guard it. Look at the ocean, look at it. The oldest stories ever made, and look at them now. We let them rot. We abandoned them long before this poisoning. We lost touch with our beginnings, with our roots, our wellspring, our source. Boring, we said, not in demand, surplus to requirements. And now, look, just look. No color, no life, no nothing. Spoilt. How this sight would have horrified Molly, Harun thought. Perhaps Molly most of all. But of the floating gardener, there was still no trace. Probably trussed up like us in another web of night, Harun guessed. But, oh, what I wouldn't give to see his gnarled old root body running along beside us now, and to hear that soft, flowery voice speaking such rough and infrequent words. The poisoned waters lapped at Butt the Hoopoe's sides, and then splashed suddenly higher as the web of night was brought to an abrupt halt. If and Harun, acting by reflex, jerked their feet away from the splashing liquid, and one of the water genies, attractively embroidered and twirly pointed slippers, fell, from, to be precise, his left foot, into the ocean, where, quick as a blink, with a fizz and a hiss and a burble and a gurgle, it was instantly eaten away, right down to the tip of its twirly toe. Harun was impressed, in a horrified way. The poison is so concentrated here that it behaves like a powerful acid, he remarked. Hoopoe, you must be made of tough stuff. If you're lucky, it was just your slipper that fell in and not you. Don't sound too pleased, but the hoopoe said moodily, without moving its beak. Who knows what's in store for us up ahead? Well, thanks very much, Harun rejoined. Another happy notion from you. But he was worrying about Molly. The floating gardener had actually been walking over the surface of this concentrated poison. He was a tough old creature, but could he withstand its acid-like power? Harun had an awful mental image of Molly sinking slowly into the ocean, where with a fizz and a hiss and a burble and a gurgle, ooh, he shook his head. No time for such negative thoughts now. The web of night was pulled away. And as the faint twilight returned, Harun saw that they had reached a large clearing in the weed jungle. Just a short distance away was what looked like a wall of night. That must be the beginning of the perpetual darkness, Haroon thought. We must be at the very edge of it now. Only a few roots and weeds, most of them badly burned by and corroded by the poison acid, floated on the surface of the ocean here. There was still no sign of Molly, and Haroon continued to fear the worst. A party of 13 Chukwalas had surrounded But the Hoopoe and pointed menacing-looking weapons at If and Haroon. They all had the same strange reversed eyes, with the white pupils instead of black ones, gray, bland irises instead of colored ones, and blackness where the whites should have been, which Haroon had first seen on the face of Mudra. But unlike the Shadow Warrior, these Chupwalas were scrawny, sniveling, weaselly-looking types, wearing black hooded cloaks adorned with the special insignia of the cultmaster Khatam Shud's personal guards. That is, the sign of the zipped lips. They looked like a gang of office clerks in fancy dress, Haroon thought. But they're not to be underestimated. They are dangerous, no question about it at all. The Chupwalas clustered around But the Hoopoe and stared curiously at Haroon, which was annoying. They were riding what looked like large, dark seahorses, which seemed to be just as puzzled by the Earth Boy's presence as their riders. For information only, But the Hoopoe revealed, these dark horses are machines also. But a dark horse, as it is well known, is unreliable and not to be trusted. Haroon wasn't listening. He had just seen that the Wall of Night, which he had thought to be the beginning of the perpetual darkness, was no such thing. In fact, it was a colossal ship, a vast, ark-like vessel standing at anchor in the clearing. That's where they'll be taking us, he understood with a sinking heart. It must be the flagship of the cultmaster Khatam Shud. But when he opened his mouth to say as much to If, he found that fear had dried his throat, and all that came out of his mouth was a strange croaking noise. Ark! He croaked, pointing to the dark ship. Ark! Ark! Gangways with railings slanted down along the side of the dark ship. The Chupwalas brought them to the foot of one such gangway, and here Haroon and If had to leave But the Hoopoe behind and begin a long climb to the deck. As Haroon climbed, he heard a piteous cry and turned to see the Hoopoe protesting without moving its beak. But that you must not take. No, you can't. It's my brain. Two cloaked Chupwalas were on Butt's back, unscrewing the top of the Hoopoe's head. From the head cavity, they removed a small, dully gleaming metal box, emitting, as they did so, a series of short, satisfied hisses, and then they simply left But the Hoopoe floating there, its circuits disconnected, its memory cells and command module removed. It looked like a broken toy. Oh, Hoopoe, Haroon thought, I'm sorry I ever teased you about only being a machine. You're the best and bravest machine that there ever was, and I'll get your brain back for you. Just see if I don't. But he knew it was an empty promise, because after all, he had troubles of his own. They climbed on. Then If, who was behind Haroon, stumbled badly, seeming on the verge of failing. A falling, and grabbed Haroon's hand, apparently to steady himself. Haroon felt the water genie pushing something small and hard into his palm. He closed his fist over it. A little emergency something, courtesy of the P2C2E house, If whispered. Maybe you'll get a chance to use it. The Chupwalas were ahead of them, and behind as well. What is it? Haroon muttered in his lowest voice. Bite the end off, If whispered, and it gives you 2 full minutes of bright, bright light. So it's called Bite-a-Light, for obvious reasons. Hide it under your tongue. What about you? Haroon whispered back. Have you got one as well? But If did not reply, and Haroon understood that the water genie had given Haroon the only such device he possessed. I can't take it. It's not fair. Haroon whispered, but now one of the Chupwalas hissed at him so terrifyingly that he decided he'd better keep quiet for a while. Up, up they climbed, wondering what the cult master had in mind. They climbed past a row of portholes, and Haroon let out an astonished gasp, because pouring out of the portholes came darkness. Darkness glowing in the twilight, the way light does from a window in the evening. The Chupwalas had invented artificial darkness, just as other people had artificial light. Inside the dark ship, Haroon guessed, there must be light bulbs, except they'd have been called dark bulbs, producing this strange darkness so that the reversed eyes of the Chupwalas, which would be blinded by brightness, could see properly, although he, Haroon, would be unable to see anything at all. Darkness you can switch on and off, Haroon marveled. Oh, what a notion, I swear. They reached the deck. Now Haroon realized just how enormous the ship was. In that dim light, it seemed that the deck was literally infinite. Certainly Haroon could not see clearly all the way to the bow, or indeed to the stern. It must be a mile long, he exclaimed. And if it was a mile long, then it was probably at least a half mile wide. Outsize, super colossal, big, if morosely agreed. Arranged in a sort of checkerboard pattern on the deck were great numbers of gigantic black tanks or cauldrons, each with its own team of maintenance operatives. Pipes and ducts led into and out of each of these, and there were ladders up their sides. Small mechanical cranes were positioned by each cauldron, too, with buckets hanging from maliciously sharp-looking hooks. Those must be the poison tanks, Haroon guessed, and he was right. The cauldrons were brim full of the black poisons that were murdering the ocean of stories, poisons in their most potent, pure, undiluted form. It's a factory ship, Haroon thought with a shudder. Ooh, and what makes it far, far worse than the sadness factories back home. The largest object on the deck of the dark ship was another crane. This one towered above the deck like a tall building, and from its mighty arm, Haroon saw immense chains descending into the waters. Whatever hung at the end of these chains, down below the ocean surface, must indeed be of astonishing size and weight. But Haroon had no idea what it was. What struck Haroon first about the dark ship and everything upon it was a quality of what he could only call shadowiness. In spite of the mammoth scale of the ship itself and the terrifying size and number of the poison tanks and the giant crane, Haroon kept having the notion that the whole affair was somehow impermanent, that there was something not quite fixed or certain about it, as if some great sorcerer had somehow managed to build the whole thing out of shadows, to give shadows a solidity that Haroon had no idea they could possess. But all this is too fanciful for words, he told himself. A boat made out of shadows? A shadow ship? Don't be nuts. But the idea kept nagging at him and wouldn't let go. Look at the edges of everything here, said a voice in his head. The edges of the poison tanks, the crane, the ship itself. Don't they look, well, fuzzy? That's what shadows are like. Even when they're sharp, they're never as sharp-edged as the real, substantial things. As for the Chupwalas, all of whom belonged to the Union of the Zipped Lips, and were the cult master's most devoted servants, well, Haroon kept being struck by how ordinary they were, and how monotonous was the work they had been given. There were hundreds of them in the Zipped Lips cloaks and hoods, attending to the tanks and cranes on the deck, performing a series of mindless routine jobs, checking dials, tightening joints, switching the tank's stirring mechanisms on and off again, swabbing the decks. It was all as boring as could be. And yet, as Haroon kept having to remind himself, what else? What these scurrying, cloaked, weaselly, scrawny, sniveling clerical types were actually up to was nothing less than the destruction of the ocean of the streams of story itself. How weird, Haroon said to If, that the worst things of all can look so normal and, well, dull. Normal, he calls this, If sighed. This boy is crazy. Bananas, out to lunch. Their captors pushed them toward a large, hatchway in which set two tall black doors bearing the zipped lips symbol of Khatam Shud. All this was done in total silence, except for the eerie hissing sound that the chupwallas used instead of speech. And when they were a few feet away from the double doors, they were stopped and held by the arms. The double doors opened. "This is it," Harun told himself. Through the doors came a skinny, scrawny, measly, weasly, sniveling clerical type, exactly like all the others, but also unlike, because as soon as he appeared, every chupwala in sight began to bow and scrape as energetically as possible, for this unimpressive creature was none other than the notorious and terrifying cult master of Bezaban, Khatam Shud, the big boogeyman himself. "That's him? That's him?" Harun thought with a kind of disappointment. "This little minging fellow? What an anticlimax!" Now came another surprise. The cult master began to speak. Khatam Shud neither hissed like his minions, nor croaked and gurgled like Mudra and the Shadow Warrior, but spoke clearly in a dull, inflectionless voice, a voice nobody would have ever remembered if it hadn't belonged to so powerful and terrifying personage. "Spies," said Khatam Shud dully. "What a tiresome melodrama. A water genie from Gup City, and something more unusual, a young fellow from, if I'm not mistaken, down there." "So much for all your silence nonsense," said If with considerable courage. "Isn't it typical? Couldn't you have guessed it? Wouldn't you have known? The Grand Pajandrum himself does exactly what he wants to forbid everyone else to do. His followers sew up their lips, and he talks and talks like Bilio." Khatam Shud pretended to ignore these remarks. Harun stared at him, looking particularly at the edges of the cult master's body, and finally he was sure. It was there. That same fuzziness, that wobbliness that he had spotted in the dark ship itself. Shadowiness, he had called it. And he'd been right. No doubt about it, he decided, this is the cult master's shadow, which he learnt how to detach. He has sent the shadow here and remains in the citadel of Chup, where the Guppy forces, along with Harun's father Rashid, must be heading even now. If he was right, and this really was the shadow become human rather than the man grown shadowy, then Khatam Shud's sorcery was very powerful indeed. For the figure of the cult master was entirely three-dimensional, with eyes moving visibly in its head. "I never in my life saw such a shadow," Harun had to admit. But his conviction that it was indeed the cult master's shadow self that had come to the old zone in this dark ship continued to grow. The chupwala who had removed Butt the Hoopoe's brain box stepped forward and gave it to Khatam Shud with a bow of the head. The cult master commenced tossing the little metal cube lightly in the air, murmuring, "Now we shall see about their processes, too complicated to explain. Once this is taken apart, I'll explain those processes. Never fear." Just then, Harun had a notion that made his head spin. Khatam Shud reminded him of someone. "I know him," he thought in utter amazement. "I've met him somewhere before. It's impossible, but there it is. He's very, very familiar." The cult master came over and peered into Harun's face. "What brought you up here, eh?" he asked in his dull, dull voice. "Stories, I suppose." He said the word stories as if it was the rudest, most contemptible word in the language. "Well, look where stories have landed you now. You follow me? What starts with stories ends with spying, and that's a serious charge, boy. No charge more serious. You'd have done better to keep your feet on the ground, but you had your head in the air. You'd have done better to stick to facts, but you were stuffed with stories. You'd have done better to have stayed home, but up you came. Stories make trouble. An ocean of stories is an ocean of trouble. Answer me this. What's the use of stories that aren't even true? I know you, Harun shouted. You're him. You're Mr. Sengupta. And you stole my mother, and you left the fat lady behind, and you're a sniveling, driveling, mingy, stingy, measly, weasley clerk. Where are you hiding her? Maybe she's a prisoner on this ship. Come on, hand her over. If the water genie held Harun kindly by the shoulders, he was shaking with anger and other emotions, and if waited until he had calmed down, Harun, lad, it's not the same guy. If gently said, maybe he looks the same, the spitting image, the exact devil, but believe me, boy, this is the cult master of Bezaban, Khatam Shud. Khatam Shud, in his clerky way, seemed quite unperturbed. His right hand continued absently to toss Butt the Hoopoe's brain box into the air. Finally, he spoke in that droning, sleepy-making voice of his. Stories have warped the boy's brain, he pronounced solemnly. Now he daydreams and spouts rubbish. Insulting, abusive child. Why would I have the slightest interest in your mother? Stories have made you incapable of seeing who stands before you. Stories have made you believe that a personage, such as the cult master Khatam Shud, ought to look like this. Harun and If both cried out in shock as Khatam Shud changed his shape. The cult master grew and grew before their appalled, astonished eyes until he was 101 feet tall with 101 heads, each of which had three eyes and a protruding tongue of flame and 101 arms, 100 of which were holding enormous black swords, while the 101st tossed Butt the Hoopoe's brain box casually into the air, and then, with a little sigh, Khatam Shud shrank back into his earlier clerkish form. Showing off, he shrugged. Stories go in for such displays, but they are unnecessary and inefficient, too. Spies, spies, he mused. Well, you must see what you came to see, though obviously you will not be able to make your report. He turned and began to slink back toward the black doors. Bring them, he commanded, and was gone. Chubwala's soldiers surrounded Harun and If and pushed them through the doors. They found themselves at the head of a wide, black flight of stairs, which disappeared down and away into the pitch darkness of the interior of the ship.